Jesus often taught in what we call parables, stories drawn from the culture, from the lives of those around him, but always with a spiritual meaning. Today I'd like to read from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, verses 24 through 30, and then continuing with 36 to 43. Another parable he put before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the householder came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then has it weeds?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' The servant said to him, 'Then do you want us to go and gather them?' But he said, 'No, lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" A little bit later, says in verse 36, "He left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field.' And he answered, 'He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed means the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the close of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and throw them into the furnace of fire. There men will weep and gnash their teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear." This is the word of the Lord. Well, it is good to be back. Some of you may not even know I was gone, but we were gone for a while. You also probably know, many of you know, that as an artist, I like to combine my art with my preaching, and so I do what I call art sermons. I've been doing them for over 20 years in various churches, and I've often been invited to go to other churches to present this rather unique form of preaching and ministry. I was invited by a couple who attended our church, winter visitors, last January, and they attended for 5 or 6 weeks and were just thoroughly intrigued with my art sermons and asked all kinds of information. And then in May, I got a call from this couple who live in Michigan and asked if I and my wife would be willing to come to Michigan and present some art sermons. She described her community on the shore of Lake Michigan as being kind of an art community with that art focus, and pretty much a summer community. I understand that the year-round population of Pentwater is about 845, but in the summertime it swells to about 10,000. So Sue and I agreed that we would come. They offered to pay all of our expenses, and so I thought, well, a week in Michigan can't be that bad. And so we made the arrangements to go to Pentwater. We flew into Grand Rapids and rented a car supplied to us and drove to Pentwater on the western coast of Michigan. They call it the other west coast. And I don't know how many of you have ever seen Lake Michigan. It is huge, to say the least. I bought a t-shirt for my granddaughter. It says, "Lake Michigan. No salt, no sharks, no problem." We didn't get a chance to go swimming because it was too cold. We had wonderful weather, and on Sunday, I presented an art sermon in the public park. They have a green across from the street, and they do a 9:30 worship service there out on the green. And I thought, well, that's wonderful to do that in the summertime. They start in June, and they go through Labor Day, And I asked him, when did you start doing this? Thinking it might have been a few years ago. And they said, in the early 70s. And they've been doing it every summer since. And so it's a tradition in Pentwater. And it's nice because it draws in all of those other people that come for the camping and all those things that might not feel comfortable going through a church door, and yet they feel very comfortable walking through and sitting on the grass and listening to the music in a sermon. And so I presented an art sermon on last Sunday morning in Pentwater out on the green. It was cloudy. It was windy. It did not rain, and when I began my art sermon, the wind died down, and I can't say the sun came out, but it was nice, and I did my art sermon. They said normally they get about 70, 80 people, and we had 115, I think, was the official count. So many people came. They did a lot of publicity, and so there were a lot of people from the art community that came. They were very intrigued by that. People from other faiths came. I met a Baptist who said that he came just because he was intrigued to see something different. And so anyway, we had a wonderful time. Our hosts were very gracious, supplied us with way too much food, and kept us busy with all kinds of sightseeing. And another couple, members of our church, who also have a home in Michigan, and said, well, if you're coming to Michigan, we're just up the road, about 3.5 hours. in a community called Charlevoix. A beautiful community, a little bit larger than Pentwater. I think their year-round population is about 1,200, but again, in the summertime, it's 10, 12,000. Beautiful community. Well, I wasn't there on a Sunday. I was there on a Tuesday, and so they had a Bible study that meets on Tuesday mornings, and they said, would you just come and do a demonstration? Well, it evolved from there until to the point where on that Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, I did a full mosaic service with the music, everything, just the way I do it, because they wanted to see what it was like with the drama, the skit, and everything. And we had about 36 or 38. They thought normally they might have 12 to 15. So we had a number of extra people come. And it was well received. And then afterwards, we drove a little up the road to Mackinac Island. Thank you, Mackinac Island. So we had a wonderful time. It was cool. It was delightful. One of the things that impressed me about Upper Michigan is how rural it is. It is so rural. And it's just dotted with all these little farms. You know, I had heard that all the farmers were being taken over by these big conglomerates, but these look like family farms, and they were growing all kinds of things, corn and I don't know what else, but lots of cherry trees. Lots of cherry trees in Upper Michigan. But it just had that very pastoral sense, driving through Michigan on these little country roads, one-lane roads, and passing all these farms. It was just so peaceful. And I thought about that. Now, I did not grow up on a farm. I know some of you did, because I asked last night at the Sabbath service, and I had several people raise their hands. Oh, let me do it anyway. Raise your hand if you grew up on a farm, or you were a farmer, or look at all these hands go up. Yes. It's a vanishing lifestyle, unfortunately. Now, my dad was a minister, Methodist minister, and he started with rural churches, and so I'm not unfamiliar with farms. I spent time on farms visiting them and had friends who grew up on farms, but it's a different kind of a lifestyle for a city boy like me. But one of the things that that engaged me about Michigan was this whole farm nature lifestyle. And it got me thinking that this is leading into the sermon now, all right? The parable of the sower, the wheat and the weeds. And I thought, what a great way of getting into that would be talk about the farm life, all right? Well, so here we have, let me tell you the story again. Here we have this farmer, okay, the head farmer, and he has bought the best seed. He's going to have the best crop. It's perfect grain for growing wheat. And he sends his stewards out, his servants, to go out and to cast the seed and to hopefully reap a wonderful harvest. And the harvest starts to come up, and the servants are appalled because there are weeds growing in the field. And they go back to the farmer, the head farmer, and they say, how did these weeds get there? Did you sow? Well, obviously you didn't sow these weeds. Where did they come from? And what was the answer? An enemy did this. An enemy did this. And so the obviously the servants want to pull up the weeds. They want to get rid of the weeds. And what does Jesus say, or what does the farmer say in Jesus' parable? He says, leave them alone. Let them grow up together, and we will separate them at the end. We will separate the wheat from the weeds at the end time. But let them grow together. Now, there's an interesting story there. All right? We in the church, now I identify with the servants, because as a servant of the Lord, one of my jobs is to cast seed, all right? I'm to put out the seeds out there in the various churches. And hopefully I'm spreading good seed. But it happens in all churches that some of that seed doesn't germinate, and we wind up getting some weeds. Every church has weeds. Every church has weeds. And we are so appalled by that we want to get rid of the weeds. And churches do numerous kinds of things to try to get rid of the weeds in the church, all right? Some of them set up rules, all right? Set up rules. You can't be a member of this church if you smoke, drink, run out with women, or go to the movies, or play cards. How many of you were in a church that frowned on you going to the movies, taking pleasure in worldly pursuits? Before my dad was a Methodist minister, both my mom and dad were Salvation Army officers. I grew up in the Salvation Army. Very, very strict. And they frowned, well, they more than frowned, it was against rules to go to the movies. That was their worldly pursuit. My dad loved movies. So my dad would break the rule. He would drive to a distant town where he could go to the movies and not be seen. But we did not have a deck of cards in our house for years and years and years. But, you know, people set up rules like that. And one of the reasons my dad left the Salvation Army to go into the Methodist Church is that the Methodist Church doesn't seem to have as many rules. Other churches have doctrinal standards, all right? We have a set belief system, and you must adhere to that. You must agree, and you must believe in this list of beliefs. And if you don't, you're outside, all right? Those are doctrinal standards. Many churches have those doctrinal standards, confessionals, all right? And that's one of the ways that they try to keep the weeds out of the church, all right? Believe this or you are out. And then there's another way that churches try to keep the weeds out, and that has escaped my mind at the moment. I'll come back to that later. But the idea is that we try to keep the weeds out of the church. But how do we identify who's weeds? Who's in a position to say that you're a weed and I'm not? Because, quite frankly, we all have a little bit of weed in us. None of us is perfect. So how do we identify the weeds? Well, sometimes we attempt to identify them by their actions. And sometimes we run across people who seem very pious and seem to be the epitome of wheat, and yet we see by their actions, the things they say and they do, cast some doubt on that. In the church, we kind of call them maybe hypocrites. Jesus was very got very upset with the Pharisees of his time because he called them hypocrites, because they put on this very religious show, but when you got right down to it, they really didn't have the heart of love and grace. You know, He talked about the Pharisees who polish their bowl very carefully but never clean out the inside. Or they talk about the Pharisees as being whitewashed tombs, all right? Clean and white and pure on the outside, but inside filled with dead men's bones. Jesus was very harsh with hypocrites. You know, there was a man who was walking down the street. The pastor saw him and he said, "Hey, we haven't seen you in church lately." And he said, "You won't ever see me in church again." "Well, why is that?" the pastor asked. And he said, "It's full of hypocrites. I just can't go to a church that's so full of hypocrites." And the pastor said, "Well, you know, there's some good news here. There's always room for one more." But there is a problem with those people who set themselves up to this high standard. And then when they fall, it's very discouraging for us who are in the church. You talk about, you know, pastors who have affairs. We talk about certainly the scandal of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church was devastating to that organization, to that faith. All kinds of people that set themselves up. One of the examples recently was Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby has set themselves up as a Christian organization. They're building a museum of the Bible that's going to cost millions. And what do? They smuggled in artifacts from Iraq. Millions of dollars. They were fined $3 million by the government, had to return over 5,000 pieces that they had smuggled in. Now, that's bad enough, but the money that they paid for those artifacts went where? ISIS. And so when you hear those things, it makes it difficult for people who are outside the faith to take Christians seriously. Hypocrites. But who are we to judge other people? Now, there's a story of two Civil War generals who were getting ready for battle, and one of the generals noticed the other general was sweating and just seemed really nervous and on astride his horse. And the other general, also on his horse, said, "You know, if I was as scared as you are, I wouldn't be on that horse." And the general returned to his friend, the other general, and he said, "Sir, if you were as scared as I am, you wouldn't be here." We don't know what's in another person's heart. And also, there is a little note to that parable about the wheat and the weeds, and that is wheat is always wheat. Weeds are always weeds. But people can change. And that's really what the church is all about, isn't it? Because none of us are perfect. None of us are in a position to judge another person. And we know that the wonderful thing about our faith is that God can touch us. God can reach us where we are and bring us to where God can minister to us. You know, the person that I think may be a weed may wind up being a better plant than I am. And so there are several messages in this parable. One is that we can't judge other people. Another message that says that we have to let them grow with us. We can't separate them out. Only God can judge another person. Only God is the final judge. And when is that final judgment going to take place? At the end of time. When we are all come before God as judge. And we stand with Christ. We are the ones who shine in the kingdom and those who are not. Now, one of the problems in our country is that our country has adopted a Christian lifestyle. Western culture is pretty much Christian. We identify with Christianity. And so people who are good people, who give to good causes, who help their neighbors, who by all looks and appear to be wonderful Christian people, they might even consider themselves to be Christians. And yet they have never given their lives to Christ. They've never come to that point in their life where they've accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. And so they go through life adopting that Christian lifestyle. There are people who go to church partly because they want to be there, but partly because, I hate to say this, but I know people who have been in business who thought it was good business to be in church and to be and good business to be in a particular church for the kind of business that they were in. And that lifestyle, that Christian lifestyle can be that's the word I'm looking for. It doesn't real. It's not real. It's not real Christianity. G.K. Chesterton, an author, British author, once said this about Christianity. He said, "People have said that Christianity has tried and failed." And he said, "The problem is that many people have tried Christianity, but they haven't." I lost that quote. It's such a simple quote, and I lost it. Oh. It's not that Christianity has been tried and failed, it's that Christianity has rarely been tried. Something like that, all right? The point is that there's a lot of us out there who identify as Christian but have never really made that faith commitment. And just because churches are full doesn't necessarily mean that they're all believers. Many of them are there for a variety of reasons. The weeds among the wheat. There's another way of looking at this parable, and that would be that the field, as Jesus said, is the world, all right? And he said that an enemy has come and has taken the field, has sown the weeds, and we're going to have to just live with that. That's the way life is. There is going to be evil in this world. We're going to encounter it all the time. It's going to be there right next to us. But another thing to look at is that that field can also be my soul. Okay? And as a farmer, I have responsibility for planting good seed in my soil, in my soul, you could even say, in my soul. And so, you know, we try our best to plant the good seeds. We try our best to be the best that we can be. But, you know, sometimes weeds get in there, don't they? You know, I have a terrible time with weeds. If you're a homeowner, you know how difficult weeds can be to get out of a lawn or out of a garden. Constantly weeding and weeding. We try to get rid of those weeds. Well, sometimes those weeds invade our lives and our souls. Sometimes they get put there by the enemy while we're sleeping. Sleeping meaning not always aware of what we're doing or what we're listening to or how the culture is affecting us. Sometimes they get into there, those weeds get in there through our own negligence or through our own lack of attention. All of us, I think, are fighting those weeds within us. But how do we get rid of those weeds? You know, do they also are going to grow together? No, we want to get rid of those weeds. And we do that through, again, going back to Scripture and being in church, turning to our Lord Jesus Christ, who will also always be there for us. So there's a number of different ways that we can look at this parable. I think the important thing that I get out of this is, number one, we are not to judge. We don't know who the weeds are. And we may look at people and say, well, that person is definitely a weed, but we don't know their heart. And even if they do look and appear to be a weed, we don't know that God can't turn that weed into wheat. God has that ability to change hearts. And the other thing is that we just have to be careful that as we live our lives, we do not present ourselves to the world as hypocrites. We need to say, as they say, we need to walk the walk and talk the talk. We need to be faithful in our lives. We need to take what we do here in the church, and we need to translate that into our culture. We need to live out our lives in such a way that when people see us, as the expression goes, they see Christ within us. That's not always easy to do. And very often we struggle with that because we are human. We are human. Paul once said in Romans, I think chapter 7, he said, I don't know why this happens, but the things that I want to do, I don't do. And the things that I don't want to do, I do. All right? Paul, the apostle, was struggling with that. We all struggle with that. Doesn't make us evil. It makes us human. And we're always struggling with those ideas of putting having our actions match our faith, match our words. And that is sometimes difficult to do in this culture. But we have to be the wheat in God's field. We have to strive to be all that we can be. Loved ones, it's a wonderful story Jesus tells us in this parable. I hope that you will take it to heart. I have a couple of more minutes. I wanted to share something more that my brother Charlie, as I said, he's a pastor of a church in Maryland, and the church, yes, Charlie, I see. I'm sure you can. But one of the things about being in Michigan is I was kind of surprised a little bit at how much history there is there. I mean, there were people in Michigan in the 1700s establishing colonies and establishing things. And my brother Charlie pastors a church that is 250 years old.
257.
257 years old. It was established before the Revolutionary War. And he told me that in the cemetery, they have tombstones that from every major conflict, starting with the Revolutionary War. That sense of history I find fascinating because we don't have that same sense of history here in Arizona, in the Phoenix area. But I did find some of that in Michigan as well. I've got some time left. I'm not going to stand up here and just talk, but... I'm sharing things that I think are interesting, but maybe you don't. But I do want to invite you to attend Mosaic. That was the reason that I was invited to go to Michigan. It's the reason I've been invited to go to churches in Ohio and other places, because what I do seems to be unique. It doesn't seem to be that big for me. I mean, as an artist, that's what I do, and I find enjoyment in it. But it's something that other people find to be very moving. I had one person tell me, I love traditional worship. I would never want to miss a traditional worship service. That's my kind of service. But she said, when I come to Mosaic, I never leave without being touched. I thought that was a nice compliment. So I invite you at 11 o'clock every Sunday morning to visit us and experience Mosaic. Well, loved ones, I have rambled on and rambled on. I had almost 40 minutes to fill, so I think I've done pretty good filling 30 of them. So let's continue with our worship by singing our closing hymn.